Word of mouth.
I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Word of Mouth from NHPR. Mobile, Alabama is home to the oldest Mardi Gras celebration in the country. Each year, parades, masked balls, and secret mystic societies replay traditions passed down since the early 18th century. And since about then, African Americans in Mobile could bear the parade torches and serve the party drinks, but were otherwise shut out. That's until 1938, when they started their own carnival party. Now black and white royal courts, balls, parades, and rituals run parallel, never crossing the color line, which this old boy declares works just fine.
Black and the white get along fine. Now, last Sunday, I don't know whether you noticed last Sunday paper, but they had the colored people had their debit cards in the paper last Sunday. Yeah. And they put on a show just like the white people do. I mean, and it's some real wealthy ones, too.
Director Margaret Brown follows the separate, unequal black and white Mardi Gras experiences in her film, The Order of Myths, which also illuminates the complex place of race in the contemporary South. We spoke to her when the film had its television debut on Independent Lens. It is now available to stream online. And I asked Margaret for an overview of Mobile's Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras started in Mobile. A lot of people think it started in New Orleans, but it started in Mobile in 1703. And, you know, the way people in Mobile talk about it is the Mardi Gras there is sort of more of, they call it a gentleman's secret, which is sort of, they don't want it to become a big tourist thing. It's more for the people who live there.
And the tradition of the masked men in the mystic societies is a big part of it. Can you illuminate that for us a little?
Mardi Gras is in Mobile. If you're in a mystic society, it means that you don't let anyone know your identity. So when these organizations are parading, they all wear masks.
And there's a kind of license there. You have a conversation with your grandfather who says a lot of things you do with the mask on that you wouldn't do otherwise.
Right. I left in the film because of the different ways you could take that one.
Right. Well, black folks and white folks have separate, but let's say not quite equal experiences at carnival time. Dora Finley, she's an activist and historian from Mobile that you interviewed. She puts it like this: Mardi Gras is the last stronghold of segregation. Is that just the way it is, Margaret? Is it just accepted?
I mean, yeah, it's strange. I think, first of all, a lot of people who are white will say, oh, it's not segregated. But, I mean, there's a white court and a black court. You know, it is. But people are kind of in denial about it, or there's sort of a code around it, the way people talk about it. And then there's some societies that, you know, don't allow black people to attend their balls.
Well, and that's part of what gets documented here. You do show us these different societies, their rituals, their facilities, the parties, the scale. And they are segregated, except for you'll see older African Americans maybe serving drinks and clearing plates at the white events. One of the royal court, the white court, is a kind of a reluctant debutante. She's a lone liberal. Her name is Britton Youngblood. She talks to the help and articulates the unspoken. Let's hear from her.
Being raised by people that were very influential in my life, that were black, I think what's always bothered me was the way in which people in the South were able to distinguish this one black person they had a relationship with from the black community as a whole. They would get close and love this person, but to there. You know, usually these people are in positions of employment. You know, you love them and you know their stories and you give them an extra 20 at Christmas and, you know, this, that, and the other. How's your daughter? How's your sister? Have those conversations. But there's a fear for getting closer than that.
I think that here in the North, we sometimes get this image of the post-race South. But it feels to me, watching this film, like this is very much alive. Does it feel that way to you?
I mean, I definitely think in the South, there's things that are more obvious than there are in other communities. One reason, without knowing what was going to happen in Mobile, that I knew it would be an interesting story is because there's a lot of times in Mobile there's a big difference between what you can see and what people say, and I think that makes for good filmmaking. I think that makes for good films. But another thing I've noticed as I've traveled with the film across the country and around the world is a lot of times people can see their own community in the film. I don't think it's like racism or some of the class issues that come up in the film are, you know, a particularly Southern phenomenon. But I think any time you're in your community and you sort of you know, look at these things. There's things to be found, and we've had some really good conversations in different cities in America. You know, I guess leading up to Obama's election was when I was traveling with it, so it was pretty interesting.
And what interesting things get uncovered? You do find that the two queens share a history. The white queen, Helen Mayer, is the descendant of a man who sailed perhaps the last ship of African-American slaves into the U.S.
Yeah.
And the black queen, Stephanie's great-grandfather, was on that ship. I wonder if that's ever been talked about publicly before your film.
I don't think it could have been, because I don't think Stephanie even knew she was descended from that ship until her grandfather said it in the interview, which was sort of amazing to me that they hadn't talked about it. I didn't know when I started making the film about that connection. That's just one of those sort of documentary gold things that happens when, you know, I knew I wanted to make a film that's sort of about how history is alive in the present, but that was more than I could have even imagined.
Well, Stephanie and Joseph, who are the black king and queen of Mardi Gras, both of them teach at a school in a neighborhood that has an 80% poverty rate, a very different experience of life. And they do decide to cross over. They decide to show up at the white ball, the first time it's ever happened. And they're pretty much treated like royalty. Here's Joseph telling the story.
As soon as Mr. Cooper found out, you know, hey, we got the man with king and queen in here, it was like everything around us changed. Give them anything they want. And I mean, when he said that, he really meant it, to where he even assigned a waiter to us. They kind of gave us the cues of where to stop and where to wave. And we knew that there was the parents of the king and queen and their family. So we stopped there, and then we came around. And just to see the people applauding and standing up and all hail the King Alexis and Queen Stephanie, it was very special.
So Joseph had a terrific time, and Stephanie did as well. And they were greeted so warmly. And as all of the old white folks were leaving the hall, they waved them on. Did you get a sense that this was genuine?
Well, you know, I think that was Joseph's experience, but I think the camera sees something else.
Hmm.
I mean, again, there's a difference between what's said and what's seen. There's a thing in the South about gentility and politeness, and often gentility and politeness is allowed to cover up things that are uncomfortable or that no one wants to talk about, and it's another mask.
The white king and queen reciprocate by coming to one of the predominantly black parties and having a terrific time. Did you leave there thinking that anything really had changed by this kind of cross-pollination?
The way I think that things change are not through the sort of photo opportunities that happen at these events, which, you know, the white king and queen poses with the black king and queen, but people really hanging out and getting to know each other. You know, I know also that as Stephanie and Joseph and Britton and Helen have traveled together with the film, you know, around the United States and in other parts of the world, they've gotten to be friends in a way that they didn't during Mardi Gras. And that, to me, is where the hope is, just people actually hanging out and talking rather than posing for a photograph together to make some kind of statement.
Margaret Brown, director of The Order of Myths, which follows the segregated Mardi Gras celebrations in Mobile, Alabama. The film was nominated for an Independent Spirit Award and is now available for streaming online. You'll find links at wordofmouthradio.org. There's more word of mouth coming right after the break. Please stay with us.